This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with the one and only Philip C. and Wong Shao Ning.
Good morning. Happy hump day.
I know, we made it to Wednesday. And of course, today is the 17th of March. A bit of a wet morning, I think. When we were driving in, there was a bit of a drizzle. I'm not so sure.
Right.
It looked, Taman Tun looked quite dry, though, I have to say.
We are shifting from scorching heat to thunderstorms.
I know, it's insane.
That's the season.
When I think about it, right, wasn't it just incredibly, incredibly hot just 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
I think the afternoon temperatures were hitting like 35 degrees, yeah. 36 degrees. And yeah. if you were trying to walk anywhere, you would literally melt.
Yes. And you now, could fry an egg, I think,
yeah,
on the pavement. That's
pretty
what
much. You could actually maybe even heat up water up to a certain level. But it's raining like crazy and terrible thunderstorms.
Yes. It makes me feel comforted.
Why?
I sleep very well when it's the heavy rain at night.
Okay.
It's great. I save on air conditioning bills as well, which is fantastic.
But is it all a sign of, unfortunately, climate change?
It
when
could
we
be.
Have these erratic weather kind of erratic weather patterns. But I guess we live in the tropics, right? This is part of Malaysian life. But what other interesting stories do we have, Philip?
We're going to talk about a sweet beverage called the milk tea. And there's this brewing
with
milk.
Bubbles or no bubbles? Boba or no baba? Boba.
I like without boba.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, I quite cheat. I don't actually, when I go to Gongcha, I don't take.
You don't take the bubble.
I actually take the aloe vera.
Okay. I am one person that doesn't like sweet tea at all.
Yes. But I think you will love this alliance.
Okay.
I think you would really support this milk tea alliance. And we're going to talk about that later.
All right. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking about managers.
Yeah. Why they actually, many of them don't want to be managers. Shock horror.
It's so true. Let me tell you. It's so true.
I relate to this topic. And if you actually scroll through your LinkedIn profile, you actually recently found many people being proud that they've rejected taking on managerial positions.
Well, sometimes it's forced upon you, but we will get to that later. As always, get in touch with us via WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in a few moments, but here's Bang a Gong, Get It On by T-Rex. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Bang a Gong, Get It On by T-Rex.
We were very perplexed with the song title. It's like, what is this song
title? I
don't know,
there was a dinosaur involved.
At 6 in the morning.
6 in the morning. But yeah, I hope it woke everybody up. But up next, this is as usual. Must be chosen by you, the one and only Philip C, because it's a very atas article from Harvard Business Review.
Whatever, like the university.
Yeah, okay. I don't know what kind of person reads this during his leisure, but it must be you, Philip C. But it's entitled Leadership Transitions. Research, becoming a manager doesn't always feel like a step up.
Amen to that. Hallelujah. I know many people who fully agree with this.
So
but still can't point a finger to it. And like, why am I in this job, even though I'm still stuck?
So the moral of the story is what? Be a machai, stay a machai, and be happy as a machai.
I think that one cannot also lah.
Okay.
You really have to map. Sorry, now we think about matrix, right?
This is your consultant persona coming out, Philip. I can
yes.
feel it. I can feel it. The word map, matrix.
Map a matrix,
okay,
right, of
yes.
your competency.
Oh, another buzzword. What else do we have this morning?
And your passion and what the business requirements are. If they all three intersect in a Venn diagram, you have reached nirvana.
I fainted already because it was Venn diagram. All these buzzwords only consultants use.
But back to this article, it is very true. I think, you know, basically they did a research and a study, an experiment between two groups, train drivers and ticket conductors. And when they assessed and promoted them to managerial positions, they found that the train drivers had managerial blues.
Okay, so they weren't happy there.
They were not happy versus the ticket conductors. And the reason was because the current jobs or the prior jobs they were taking had so much responsibility that when they transitioned towards the managerial position, they found it very hard to adjust.
Because there wasn't so much responsibility.
The perceived responsibility had shifted.
So these are for the train drivers, right? Because there's this probably sense of lives. I'm in charge of lives, right? I
yes.
need to be careful. I need to be responsible. If I make a mistake, people will die. Accidents will happen.
Correct.
So they already had this great sense of duty.
Worry and fear as well.
So when they got promoted to be managers, they found that actually managers don't do very much. Is that, is that the nutshell?
I think that's a shallow nutshell. Of course, because we know managers have a deeper responsibility, but it's just framed differently.
Okay, says the manager.
I'm talking to my boss here, actually.
I can understand the managerial blues in the sense that if you also work for an organization, I'm going to pivot a little bit, where you work for an organization where they're not clear. And I'm not referring to BFM, by the way. But if they are not clear and they don't have a vision and they don't have an objective, and then your job is just really mundane. It's like the day-to-day guys just do A, do B, do C. I think anyone after a while will feel this managerial blues, right? So the management is also responsible for making sure that the managers on some level have a greater sense of responsibility than just the daily tasks and start seeing things from a more like a visionary perspective, right? Because otherwise, everything also just becomes boring. And that's the truth.
Yeah, you don't want the manager just to be an administrator.
Yes.
That's what always happens. When you move someone who is technically proficient, okay, let's just set you up a bit better, be an administrator. And that's when I think people feel, oh, okay, this is really not value adding. I don't think I'm using the best of my skills. I just feel so despondent and unhappy. Interestingly, as a leader, I love to hire people who are very worried and are fearful a bit, because you know that they're going to take it very seriously and understand that the transition they will move to the new role is not going to be a walk in the park.
Mm.
And they understand the technicalities, the challenges, how difficult it is to operationalize and make things work. So when they are a manager, it's going to be nuanced, but it's a very tough balance to strike.
Well, actually, if I look back at my own career or like even my time at BFM and, you know, yeah, okay, so I kind of manage you all in the morning run. And it's a sense of responsibility, right? You come on air every day at 6 and you want to put on a good show, you want to inform, you want to educate. And, you know, you're trying to sift through all the news, trying to get the best guests. And yeah, it's a worrying process. You're right, you know, because you feel there's a bit of responsibility here. But it also then means that, you know, how do I go beyond just the day-to-day, right? Because you want to plan shows for the future. You're almost trying to spot trends in terms of news. And I think this is the part where I personally find challenging, is to motivate the team to have the same vision.
Yeah.
Or to move in the same kind of speed, because you don't want anyone left behind, right? You want everyone to be encouraged. You want everyone to feel that they are also empowered, that they too can make decisions. They too can make changes within the team. Now, that is, to me, like the biggest struggle of being a manager. And in COVID-19, with team rotations, I think many of us out there, many of my friends are also on some form of team rotation. Some of them haven't even come back to work. Some are working completely from home and they haven't seen their colleagues in months. That becomes an even greater challenge.
Oh, it's super difficult. I mean, we've had this conversation many times. Can you imagine someone new joining an organization, needing to manage a team who they've not met in person? It is a nightmare.
It is.
It is so difficult.
And it's not fair to the newbie. It's not fair to the team that I'm not in rotations with.
Yeah.
But it's almost a fact of life due to COVID-19. You know, what can we do? So, to all the interns that I hired but I never met, I'm sorry, because of rotations. It's just one of those things. And I wonder, how are we ever going to work around this? These are the practical things that COVID-19 has thrown upon us, which affect us as managers, which already the problems existed before COVID-19. Are we ever going to resolve them, Philip? I don't know. And how do we get over these managerial blues?
Yeah, I think we will have to talk about this in a lot more detail. This whole work from home, how do we get cultures back up again?
Yeah, post-COVID? Because the blues existed before and the blues will continue. So let us know what you think. Do you have managerial blues? Does COVID-19 make it worse? Does working from home make it a nightmare? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages, but keep it here. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Cruel by St. Vincent, and hopefully no one is being cruel to you today, or at least for the rest of the day.
Pray tell, all animals as well.
Yes, that is true. Of course, today is Wednesday, the 9th, is it 17th of March? Yes, 17th of March, and it's 6:20 in the morning, a bit of a wet day. But up next, we've got this interesting article by Reuters. Actually, it's a political one. It's all about the Myanmar protests, which unfortunately, have become a little bit more violent. Our military has really kind of stormed in, used violence. But activists around the region are responding and responding very cleverly, I would say.
Yes, they found some connecting tissue across all the youth, and it's milk tea. And they've decided to call themselves the Milk Tea Alliance.
Hashtag
milk tea. You must always have the hashtag now,
Must. Please, Masa, yeah. Now you are, you know, like betraying your age, Philip.
I know.
When you don't put the hashtag.
What's a hashtag? Hash browns?
No.
But in any case, this is really a way to unify youth in ASEAN and neighbors against the atrocities that are taking place in Myanmar. As you said just now, 2 days ago, the highest number of deaths. Mm. I love this.
State of military now.
Yes. But I love how we are finding unifying symbols among Asian youth. Because in the past, it was kind of outside, externally driven. You always say, oh, Western democracies are, you know, pillaging us and so on and so forth. But it's really good to see that the youth are unifying and standing up.
Yeah, so this hashtag, which originated, according to Reuters, as a protest against online attacks from nationalists in China, was apparently used millions of times on Sunday. And this was the Sunday, I think, 2 Sundays ago. Mm. Now, its name, of course, originated from the shared passion for the milky drink in the region. I think most of us in Malaysia would have tried at least once in their life a milk tea from the various many shops that there are
at,
out there.
At USJ,
right?
Subang. Yeah, you know, yeah. The row of...
Yeah, Boba capital Tiger of Sugar. Malaysia. You know, yes. There's plenty, right? So it's become such the norm. And everywhere you go, there is a boba tea shop. Not just in Malaysia, but of course in Singapore, Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, Thailand. I've seen it in Jakarta, yeah. Bali. Have even seen it in Australia. You know, it's gone everywhere.
I personally don't drink it, and I heard it's like, it's a
You've
sugar.
You've never tried it?
I've tried it. It's a sugar injection to
it's
your
like
body.
It's like a bomb,
it's
right?
It's like a bomb. But what is interesting about milk tea is that it's got so many variations. Mm. And you can adjust your sugar levels, you can do different bobas to it, or you can even have non-boba with aloe vera, whatever stuff, right? So it kind of does cater to this generation that has different needs as well. So you don't have this similar... a monolithical identity of the milk tea. It's diverse. And I think that's why people find a commonality to unify around that.
But I think what is the biggest story for me here is the fact that activists, young activists, are getting together in Asia.
Yeah.
So the protests or the dissent that you're seeing in a country is not only just by the people in the country, but it's a rallying cry across the country. So true. Younger people are seeing things with a wider lens, right? In saying that, okay, I feel for my fellow young people in this country and I will rally to support them. And this, to me, is a good thing because it shows shared ideals that people want. So whether it's freedom of, freedom to speak, freedom to protest, the right to vote, all these things have become important to young people.
It's a very positive identity politics that people are moving to, especially for the young. Because if you remember our generation or the older ones, there's a very nationalistic thinking.
Yeah, inward,
and me versus them. And generally, neighbors don't get along so much. You always hear tensions, you know, Malaysia versus Indonesia, Malaysia versus Singapore, Thailand versus Myanmar, Vietnam, and so on and so forth. Mm. But you don't see that so much in the youth. And that's great. Because when a neighbor's house is on fire, you want the neighbors to rally around.
Yep. And if you don't put out the fire together, the whole row is going to burn down.
And it's very comforting that the neighbors are younger.
Of course, I think this so much is driven by social media, right? It would not be possible if social media did not exist. And I think social media makes us all connected in one way or another. But it also shows the level of education, which is great, right? Yeah. In terms of the common ideals. It shows a certain level of maturity of young people. We shouldn't take them for granted anymore, the way they organize themselves. And even in Myanmar, I think until recently, the protests didn't seem to have any leader. It was rather sporadic, but somehow they managed to get together. And this was something you also saw in Hong Kong, for example, right? So I think over time, it's also going to happen here.
It's fascinating because Hong Kong, you had the umbrella protests, and umbrellas were really designed to protect themselves from the gas, right? And the tear gas and so on and so forth. Milk tea here is a pretty staid thing. It doesn't really feel so like...
dynamic?
It doesn't feel so dynamic or connective, but still it's a fun, it has a fun element to it that I think youth also can connect and relate to.
I don't know, maybe it's just the common love for boba at the end of the day, right? Everybody relates.
Yeah.
Most kids in Asia, teenagers, you know, young adults, even myself, have all had a taste of boba. It's something we identify with. So it's something super common, right? Across different countries, different races, different religious groups, we've all had tea.
Now, contrasting that to the US, if you remember about a decade ago, there was this tea party.
Mm.
That is historical, right?
The Boston Tea Party. Yes, they were backward looking, they weren't forward looking.
They were backward looking. Those Americans, right? Totally backward looking. But we in the youth are unifying over this tea-like symbol, which is great. Whereas in the US in the past, this whole tea party was very much conservative driven.
Well, kudos to you young people organizing yourselves. Hashtag Milk Tea Alliance. Go forth. But let us know what you think. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we have the new news bulletin, and to take us there is Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now by The Smiths, which is not true.
I hope not.
Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, good morning. This is Wong Shaoning and I'm here with Philip C on The Morning Run. And that song was We Are All Made of Stars by Moby. How true?
Really?
I would like to think
balls
so.
Balls of gas? Are we really made out of balls of gas?
Well, that's you being the physicist, thinking about the reality of it. But I'm thinking more like, you know, hey, yeah, we're out there shining brightly.
Like the sun, right?
Like the sun. Anyway, it is Wednesday, 17th of March, 6:40 in the morning. And of course, we're turning our attention to international headlines. And it's Hong Kong, because COVID-19 vaccination appointments appear to be getting snapped up quickly in the island state after the government expanded across to shots in a bid to boost the lackluster inoculation rollout. So appointments open up in the city's central business district on Tuesday, the first day that eligibility expanded to adults aged between 30 to 59 years old. And of course, the CBD is also home to most of Hong Kong's expat community.
Right, as popular as its roast goose, but in a sign that many local residents remain skeptical of inoculation, vaccination centers in Kowloon and the New Territories had more vaccines. Now, you know, Shawnee, I'm very interested because when you look at the data, Hong Kong's vaccination rate is 2.54, right? Which is not very high if you compare to other countries that have already passed 10%, 15%.
Mm. And 2.54%.
Yes, out of 100.
Okay.
Right? So, which is lowish, right? Mm. But getting there.
Mm.
So, interesting that they've expanded it so fast to everybody at this low rate.
I think, okay, when you think about it, what is Hong Kong? Hong Kong is probably Asia's second largest financial hub after Tokyo. Super duper dependent on tourism. Super duper dependent on opening up their borders as soon as possible. Because what are they selling? They're selling services. Whether it's legal services, financial services, it's a service, right? They need to get their ports running. You know, it's a hub. And if you don't get borders open ASAP, you're going to be in a little tight spot. And I think they're like Singapore. They're like, let's get everyone vaccinated as quickly as possible so we can get back to our pre-COVID era, right? Because it's about an open economy.
I think you're right. I think what I think Asian countries are thinking about is, let's just not focus too much on the vulnerable or poor because and weak, because they're not many also, because vaccination rates, COVID rates have been quite high. But let's also focus on the economically mobile.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why you need to expand it.
I think also it's partially driven by the fact that the uptake has been rather dismal among the priority groups, leaving millions of doses unused. So if the priority groups aren't standing up and saying, you know, I want to take my jabs, then, you know, I agree. Roll it out to everyone.
Yeah, you're right.
But the question is, how do you then overcome vaccine hesitancy in the vulnerable groups, which is actually very, very critical, because they are the ones who, if they get COVID-19, suffer, you know, high levels of death, you know, suffer tremendously in terms of like the symptoms, the side effects. So I think Hong Kong also just needs to have that conversation about why is the take-up rate so low among these priority groups? What's the reason?
It's a good point, because as you said, only 5.4% of the vulnerable group have actually come forward and have been inoculated, right? So that's a really low number, considering that only already 2.5% in the whole population have already been inoculated.
And this is something that Malaysia can learn from, because as we move from phase one, so we move from the frontliners, certain politicians, of course, getting their vaccines, then we move to the vulnerable group, so the elderly, right? Those with existing preconditions. Will we suffer the same issues? Will the take-up rates be low? Because I think the MySejahtera app, in terms of vaccination, people signing up, the number is still somewhat disappointing.
That's right.
So I think we should learn lessons from wherever and find out why. But yet, in some countries like in Europe and America, the take-up rate with the elderly has been actually pretty high. Mm. And I think because they go to the elderly care centres, they are quite, aggressive in their rollout. And whether they use, like in England, using the Queen of England was one of the first, whether that kind of messaging also helps.
And I wonder also the experience of having so high COVID death rates and infections, I think kind of spurred people to move forward.
Yeah, because you can see the consequences,
right? You can see the consequences, but whereas in Asia that's not happening, you hit a nail on the head, which is the shift from lack of vaccine supply to vaccine hesitancy will shift very fast.
Yes, yes.
And you can, and we talked about it yesterday, seeing where the COVID registration data is in MySejahtera will give you a sense already where the hesitancy might be appearing. So whether or not we use and mine the data in MySejahtera to see where hesitancy is will be quite critical.
Well, we already know some aspects of that, right? I think if I'm not wrong, the East Coast states,
20%
only. Yeah. So this needs to be addressed. And I think every state, every segment of society needs to be looked at in a different way. It's not a cookie cutter approach for everybody. Different people have different reasons, and it's through data, science and logic. And also just being transparent about, yes, there are some side effects. You need to know this.
Yep.
And that will help to overcome some of the issues. But moving on to the US and somewhat China, remember them, they don't get along so well. But apparently the US intelligence community concluded with high confidence that China didn't attempt to change the outcome of the 2020 elections. And this is an assessment that contradicts repeated assertions by former President Donald Trump. Remember him? And his allies. Well, hopefully we won't remember him so much. Now, the agencies also found that Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered influence operations. However, he didn't behave so well, Putin, to hurt President Joe Biden's candidacy.
Well, in the end, let's just hope there's no foreign interference in any elections.
Yes, there shouldn't be.
In any case,
Russia
or China.
But let us know what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, of course, we'll take a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Shaoning with Philip C, and this is The Morning Run, and that was Walking on Sunshine by Katrina and the Waves.
I love that song. Although there's no sun yet.
Yeah, but actually, if our listeners could watch you, Philip, they would have noticed that you are jigging the moves, okay?
I'm a very bad dancer, though.
It's okay. I'm a firm believer that everyone should just let it out. Bad or good, doesn't really matter. Just move with the tunes, it's fine. Well, it's just gone past 6:49 in the morning. And before we look at some of the headlines in the papers, I want to read out some of the social media we're getting. And this part, I think, is quite true. I'll call him anonymous because he doesn't have a name. And he points out, rightly so, that US itself is notorious in influencing other countries' elections, example Venezuela, etc. So it shouldn't complain about Russia or China influencing its presidential elections. Now, I agree, US is very meddlesome, especially in South America, and it doesn't have a fantastic track record. But the point is, I think no one should interfere in anyone's elections, would stop.
Well, look at the results. If you see the US, right, they've tried to meddle in South America, and what do you have? You have
disaster.
A whole bunch of either left-leaning or right-leaning governments, really to the extreme side.
Yeah, and we also had a tweet come in from Nazarullah about managerial positions, whether you should step back from it. And he says, nope. It's a new chapter in one's career. And that's so true. Sometimes you just have to embrace the change. And yes, it can be daunting, but at the same time, it can be very exciting and very exhilarating. And very rewarding.
And a great learning experience.
Yeah.
I think you cannot discount that. And sometimes you just do it because the organization needs you.
Yes. And talking about someone who's just got a new job and leading a new company is Jaleel Rashid. Now, he's emerged as the first non-family member CEO of Berjaya Corp. And this is reported in the CEO morning brief by The Edge Daily. So, a bit of a difference from a GLIC to one of the most well-known conglomerates in Malaysia.
Two very interesting points that come through. You know, Berjaya is a conglomerate, so I wonder if they will
access... Family-run conglomerate.
Family-run conglomerate. So those two operative words, right, conglomerate, will they tap on its experience in managing portfolios? But it's quite different, right, an investment portfolio versus a business portfolio. So
yes.
How it makes that transition is going to be key. But more importantly, in Malaysia, the family-run businesses are quite a close-knit family. So how is he going to make it work in a very much close-knit family is going to be closely watched.
Yeah, so this is the first time Berjaya Corp CEO position is going to be held by someone who is not a member of the Tan family. And according to The Edge, the new appointments were made to transform Berjaya Corp into an institutionalized corporation managed by professionals. His mandate will be to relook at Berjaya Corp's corporate structure, optimize financial and human resources, improve synergies and efficiencies. All this is clearly written by some consultant. I suppose improve the ROE and ROI and EPS, all the things that fund managers look at when they look at the company.
I'm very hesitant when someone has very clear plans on the first day of appointment. Because where's the diagnostics done to say what really is the issue or challenges?
Yeah.
I think you should just gracefully say, okay, well, thank you for the appointment. I'll do my best. Let me go and find out more what's going to happen. And
but
then come
they
up
would
with
have given
later.
You some KPIs. Otherwise, they wouldn't be paying you the big bucks, right, at the end of the day.
But you're CEO, so you must push back and say, well, I don't think these KPIs work.
Okay, maybe after a while. But another leader that we're focusing on is Anwar Ibrahim, Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim, because he had a press conference yesterday at 4:30 p.m., and according to him, this is the Malaysian Insight, he says 4 more PKR lawmakers asked to defect.
Yeah, and he seemed very unhappy and was planning to have a conversation with MACC because he was kind of stating that MACC was being used as a tool to threaten MPs to jump ship. And if you recall, we had a conversation with OE Sun, I think 3-4 days ago, where we asked with respect to Xavier Jayakumar, was he threatened or was he incentivized?
Yeah, and was there more to come? Meanwhile, Dato Sri Anwar Ibrahim insists he has adequate majority and talks with UMNO in the initial stage.
You know, you make a good point. The word adequate doesn't seem to be as strong as I think previous statements he's made, where there were more convincing majorities in place. Don't you think so?
Yeah, we need to study his speeches like how we study FOMC minutes, right, by the Fed. So like underline every single change and that will give you some nuance in terms of, you know, who has the majority in parliament, who doesn't. But I think we'll be watching this space quite closely. Of course, Malaysian politics never dull.
Never dull.
Never dull for a moment, right? But apparently there are still initial discussions between PKR leaders and UMNO leaders about this. Who knows? But Cheryl Hamdan, who is the UMNO information chief, said that the party is still holding on to its Supreme Council's decision not to work with PKR or DAP. And this was reported in Malaysia Kini today.
One thing just to notice, if you're at the newspapers, right, you're seeing a lot of articles about GST, about structural reform policies, and it's all at the back of the recently announced World Bank report, which stated on the top line figure that Malaysia would be a high income nation by 2025. It's a very nice headline figure, but actually if you dig deeper in the report, you're going to see a lot of challenges faced. And I think that's why you see in the news headlines now a whole bunch of things about structural reform, human capital required, GST being reviewed, even Tengku Zrafo yesterday coming out to say with a pretty lengthy speech about what Malaysia needs to do. And it got me thinking that I think these guys know that there are serious challenges ahead in meeting that number. And I think World Bank wisely had done the engagements. So hence, all these actions are being raised in this time.
And this is something we will be discussing with World Bank themselves. So Richard Record, who is the lead economist, he's coming on at 7:45 to talk about the report about how Malaysia could be a high-income nation between 2024 to 2028. Now, do tune in. I think that's going to be a very interesting conversation. I think this is also against the backdrop that, you know, 12 Malaysia Plan is coming up. right? Mm. And we've got shared prosperity, for example. All these grand plans, Jandela, My Digital. I want to know how they're all actually connected, right? At the end of the day, it doesn't work if the plans are in isolation. We need to see things more cohesively. But coming up next is a 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be finding out where global markets are heading with Jack Kuzi of the VFS Group. Keep it here. But first to take us there is We're a Winner by Curtis Mayfield. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.